You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Vancouver has one of the most expensive housing markets in the world. Until about two decades ago, housing cooperatives used to fill the gap between rental and private ownership. But today, new housing cooperative projects are rare. Monte Paulson is a contributing editor for the Tyee and has been writing about housing issues for the past 4 years. He just released a four-part series looking at how to rebuild cooperative housing for the 21st century. The research for those articles was based on a panel discussion held by the Tyee with cooperative housing associations, municipal housing planners, and credit union economists all taking part. Red Eye's Peter Driftmeyer spoke with him earlier this week, and Peter started by asking if there was a particular period of growth for housing co-ops in Canada.
Well, yeah, there were first building co-ops. It really was a Canadian initiative that came out of the prairies where people banded together to build homes and barns and communities. And then in the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of housing cooperatives that were made possible by some funding assistance from the federal government. So here in Vancouver, for example, many of the homes on the South Shore, False Creek, those 70s and 80s townhomes and small complexes, were all built as co-ops and remain affordable today because of the way they were financed back then.
Has co-op development funding slowed down from the government?
Well, yeah, it pretty much completely stopped in the early 90s. The federal government simply stopped putting money into that form of housing and then gradually stopped putting money into any form of social housing. So the ability to get the federal government to cover the gap between actual construction costs, which are very high in Vancouver right now, and what a co-op group can afford went away, and I don't think there's been a new co-op built. I shouldn't say that. There's been very few new co-ops built in the last decade.
And can you briefly describe what makes cooperative housing different from rental property and home or condo ownership?
Yeah, and that's the question a lot of people misunderstand. So a co-op is a little bit like a condo, except whereas in a condo or a strata, the owner owns the individual unit and the strata association owns the common space. In a co-op, each owner owns a share in a cooperative company that owns the whole building. Now, in some cases, that share can be traded on the open market just like a strata, and you can buy and sell your share in the co-op. And in other cases, there are some restrictions on resale, and so the price to get in is much, much lower, and at the same time, the money you might get back if you sell it is much, much lower. However, even in those cases, you still get the benefits of home ownership. No one can evict you. It's not like an apartment where your landlord can decide, okay, we're going to do something else with this building now and throw you out. No one can raise your rent. The condo association or the co-op association as a whole sets the monthly fees that one pays to help manage the building. And you get to sort of modify your unit the way you want and make decisions about your building the way you want. So for a lot of years, co-op has existed in this space where it provides much more security and much more community than a rental building without the high costs and the market leverage of a strata building or a condo.
And what is it about the financial structure that reduces those costs?
Well, in the case where there was some assistance to build a building in the first place, the building essentially gets introduced at a below market rate, and then over the course of 20 or 25 years, the initial construction and capital costs get paid off. So from that point on, the co-op owner and future co-op owners are really just paying for the maintenance and ongoing repairs of the building rather than for the initial capitalization.
So in the articles, the panel looked at different financial structures that the cooperatives themselves could have. Which forms did the panel see as the most useful for today's Vancouver context?
Yeah, it was a really exciting conversation, and we were only able to report on some pieces of it in the Tyee.ca, and that series of articles came out this last week or so. One of the ones that got a lot of discussion was this idea of some sort of a hybrid between the traditional co-op model and the condo model or strata model, where you would have a shared equity plan. Maybe the actual construction cost to build a new family apartment. And this is not counting developer profit and marketing, but just what it really costs to buy the land and build the thing, to build like a three-bedroom apartment, I mean a real family home, would be close to $400,000, $500,000 in this market at this point in time. And the average family here in Vancouver, a median two-income family, earns about $60,000 to $65,000 a year. So they're able to qualify for about a $250,000 mortgage. That's not enough to buy a $500,000 place, obviously. So what the panel was saying is, well, what if that couple or that young family took a mortgage out at the bank and put in $250,000, and then a combination of governments and maybe some charitable funding put in the other $250,000, and that they shared the equity in the unit. So the homeowner would have about half or 60% of the equity in the unit, and this other entity would have another 40 or 50% equity and would manage that equity in the public good for everyone in that building. And that other unit might be a co-op or a land trust of some sort rather than a private company.
You said that some of that funding would come from a combination of government and maybe potentially charitable funding. Is today's government and charitable funding landscape prepared to commit that kind of money?
You know, it's not as far off as you might think at first blush. So when you talk about government funding, you have to talk about the three levels of government. The city of Vancouver and several of the surrounding cities have been steady providers of land for cooperative and nonprofit housing all through the last several decades. Vancouver in particular has put up land for co-ops, for nonprofits, for social housing, for the homeless, and takes it out of its own land bank and contributes what is really the key piece to make a project happen. And in cases like these, the land value on one apartment might be between $50,000 and $100,000, depending on the nature of the building and the location. So that's a huge chunk that is available now and would be available ongoing. The other piece that has been available for some time is that the federal government passes through the province about $75,000 per unit for co-op and nonprofit housing under a fairly strict set of circumstances. That money does get applied in Ontario, and there have been quite a few nonprofit buildings built with that $75,000 per unit subsidy. And quite a few in Quebec, where Quebec actually goes a step farther and matches that. So you get a total of $150,000, $75,000 from the province and $75,000 from the feds. If you put those three pieces together, the municipal contribution, the provincial contribution, and the federal contribution, and they were to be capital grants, there really is enough money in existing programs to cover the gap between what a median family can afford and what it costs to build a unit. So there is enough money on the table to build new affordable housing, even in a place like Vancouver, if all of these programs could be orchestrated in a common cause sort of way. What hasn't happened is the ability to pull these things together, and it's complicated a bit here in British Columbia that this province has decided not to pass through that $75,000 a unit, but rather to divert it to the many homeless buildings and seniors buildings and other supported housing buildings. This government has taken an attitude that they're only doing social housing with services, not simply affordable housing for working families.
And what are the pros and cons to that?
Well, the pros are we've built a lot of housing for homeless people in the last few years, or I should say we started construction on a lot of housing for homeless people, especially here in Vancouver, but also across the province. And in a province where we have 10,000 to 15,000 homeless people, that's very valuable. That's very important. And by and large, people moving in off the street have other health issues, physical issues, mental issues, addiction issues that need treatment and need support services. So they're not ready to simply move into a home by themselves and be all hunky-dory in many cases. The downside is, while we've kind of been addressing one piece of the problem, the homeless problem, we may have not been addressing the next piece of the housing continuum, which is after you go through some sort of homeless treatment program, you get off drugs, you deal with some of your physical and mental disabilities. Where do you move next? You're no longer eligible for that specific support service housing, and there's nothing on the marketplace here in Vancouver between about $500 and $800 a month. There's just no place to live in that range except to be roommates with a lot of other people. And I think that's the kind of niche that an alternative, a kind of reinvented co-op housing might serve really well. It's just good, basic, vanilla apartments within walking distance of neighborhoods where there's a lot of jobs that can be rented for $600, $700, $800 a month.
That sounds really great. Now, many groups across Canada and here in Vancouver especially are calling for a national housing strategy. How would that impact this rebuilding of the co-op housing movement?
Well, there's a lot of discussion that has to happen about that, and we definitely need a federal housing strategy. We're the only G8 nation without one, and it's really starting to show, both in terms of our homeless crisis and in terms of the kind of more hidden housing crisis among working families. What that housing strategy looks like, the devil is in the details very much. If it takes a traditional model, the way we thought of as public housing 40, 50 years ago, and you take some amount of money, let's say it's $100 million nationally, and you have to build the entire $500,000 apartment out of the federal government, that will be a good thing. That will create a lot of new apartments. But the money will run out very quickly. If the strategy pursues a path like that that we discussed at our Reinventing Co-ops panel and that we presented in the TAI.ca, the money might be able to go a little farther. If you're able to match some private equity, some provincial money, some city land, possibly some charitable or long-term investment in some new kind of form that stays a co-op, stays in the public good, doesn't get taken back and redeveloped into condos, there might be a path by which we could take whatever federal dollars are available and make them stretch much farther and build much more housing. So that's the question we were asking in this panel and the ideas we kicked around. If any of this were to work, the kind of ideas we put out in the TAI, it would require new enabling legislation on the part of the federal government and the province to create some sort of a new strata slash co-op model or some sort of a shared equity model that allowed both public-private money to go into the same building.
You briefly mentioned in there the potential for private investment. What are some of the issues around making that work?
Well, first let's talk about the advantage of it. I mean, the crazy thing about the high price of housing in this market is that there are, in the file folders, in bankers' offices across the city, literally thousands of families that have pre-qualified for mortgages of $200,000 or $250,000 or $300,000, but they cannot find a family home for $200,000 or $250,000 or $300,000. Really, all you can get in that price range is a shoebox of a one-bedroom or a bachelor suite. And so the funny thing that happens here is every time even a good one-bedroom or a one-bedroom and den comes up in that price range, it sells in an hour because there are so many buyers. And what we realized as we looked at this is we have sidelined millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars of potential investment from families, from working-class folks here in British Columbia that is eager to leap into the building of new housing, but we don't have a vehicle for it to get in. At the same time, there is some limited degree of funds from the federal and provincial money, for federal and provincial governments, that's willing to get into this, around $75,000, maybe $100,000 a unit, plus some city land. But that's not enough to build. What hasn't been done is some ability to take both and say, look, there could be some private equity here, there could be some homeowner equity, and there could be some public money. Finding a way to put those together that is fair, equitable, both for the private investor and the taxpayer and the community good, is the trick. So what would the problems be? The problem would be if you had speculative investors buying these somewhat subsidized condos who were then able to turn around and flip them onto the larger market for $500,000. You know, if you could buy something for $250,000, sell it for $500,000 2 weeks later, that's quite an investment. So there would probably need to be residency requirements to buy this kind of apartment. There would probably need to be some resale restrictions where you can't turn around and sell at an open market rate, but you can sell it on a rate that's appropriate for these buildings. And again, in the co-op movement, in the co-op community, they have been working with exactly these sorts of issues and these sorts of problems for 20 years. And our sense, at the TAI.ca and on the panel was that there's really a great body of wisdom and expertise in the co-op community that could help address these problems, and that same sort of expertise does not exist in the condo strata community, and it might be time to sort of marry this older wisdom that's gone out of favor with this new business model and see if we could make something work.
And that was TAI contributing editor Monty Paulson speaking with Red Eye's Peter Driftmeyer earlier this week. Monte published a four-part in-depth look at rebuilding the housing co-op movement in Vancouver and across Canada. And you can read those articles by visiting the TAI.ca, and the TAI is all one word.